Sweet. Parker and Bobby, how's everything going?
Going great. How are you guys?
Good to see you guys.
Yeah. So I brought you guys on because you guys are both working on interesting sort of small business type stuff. And I think this is an important topic because there's a lot of people that want to get into Bitcoin companies. And, you know, I get that there are a lot of cool Bitcoin companies to work for and so on. But I think both of you guys have a vision of Bitcoin that's a little bit different. And I think that that's a growth area that I don't think too many people are thinking down. But before we get to all of that, why don't you guys tell us a little bit about what you're doing and what, you know, what your vision is for the companies that you work for, and sort of start there, because I don't know if they my audience necessarily knows what you're working on at the moment.
All right. So Parker Lewis. I'm currently working on a company called Zaprite. I'm head of business development at Zaprite. We're working on enabling businesses to migrate to a Bitcoin standard, and specifically focusing on enabling both individuals and businesses to accept Bitcoin as payment. And I think, you know, Bobby speaks on this really well, but the way that we view the shift to Bitcoin payments working is that it will be by merchants demanding to be paid in Bitcoin, and that it will really start with small to medium-sized businesses for a range of reasons. And you know, in our context, we're generally focused on people who already understand why Bitcoin will store value, because those are the most logical people to then want to accept Bitcoin directly for goods and services, and they're the most likely early movers to be set up with infrastructure to actually affect the acceptance of Bitcoin as payment. And so that's primarily what I'm focusing on, and then also I'm hawking books for Graduate Then Suddenly.
There you go. Bobby?
That's awesome. Yeah, my name is Bobby Schell. My background is working with small to medium-sized businesses, managing their marketing, and I've been an entrepreneur owning businesses, you know, since I was 11 years old, mowing lawns, you know, an SMB. And worked at a digital agency for about 12 years marketing these SMBs. And in 2020, 2021, I was like, I want to switch to Bitcoin. Fired a tweet off, built a little quote-unquote personal brand online, and had, you know, 6 job offers. It changed my life, helped me find Voltage, where I'm now the VP of marketing, and Voltage integrates nicely with Zaprite, what Parker's working on, you know, helping small businesses accept payments. And, you know, before I had a job at Voltage, I started my own holding company and our own digital marketing agency that my partner runs the day-to-day, and we market small businesses. We've got like 14 employees now, and while he runs the day-to-day to that, I'm working hard educating about Bitcoin and SMB, and that's why we're here. And I think what really inspired this, when Parker released his some of his newer content, you know, now that his book is out and I'm seeing him in a lot more videos, kind of becoming a public figure a bit more, if you will, in Bitcoin, I've really loved that he's gravitated to the SMB piece. Because one of the things where there's kind of this esoteric knowledge of business acquisition, and when it comes to private equity, which is swallowing up everything in the world, it feels like, there's a corner of it that focuses on what is called acquisition entrepreneurship. And, you know, as private equity absorbs things, individuals and local communities don't own them over time. And there's stuff we can dive into as to what that means that a lot of folks in the SMB space are talking about on Twitter and X. But what we were kind of kicking around the idea on before the call was helping Bitcoiners view opportunity, you know, outside of Bitcoin. Like, you don't have to necessarily work for a Bitcoin company. You could potentially start a small business. You could accept Bitcoin. You could do things that actually bring Bitcoin to your local market. And you raise a good point, Jimmy. Like, we all have different views of what's going to happen with Bitcoin. And one thing I try to remind folks to kind of wrap this up and we can move forward is Bitcoin and money, you know, it solves the coincidence of wants. I'm not going to trade chickens for a house. And Bitcoin, it brings digital money to the forefront, and it allows us to, you know, better solve for the coincidence of wants in a global way. So for those of you who are maybe not an engineer, maybe you're not just a salesman, but you got the white-collar trade skills, starting or acquiring a small business is a great thing. And you could educate people about Bitcoin, offer incentives, and, you know, kind of go from there. But a lot to dive into, but, you know, a little intro and kind of what I think maybe inspired this conversation here today.
Yeah, those are all great points. And one of the things I'll point out is something like 80% of jobs are actually small and medium businesses in America. And like that's a significant, significant part. And if you've sort of like courted yourself off to working for a large business or a Silicon Valley startup or something like that, you're literally like, you know, ignoring 80% of the possible work that you could be doing. And a lot of those could definitely be a good fit depending on, you know, what you want to do. Let's go back to the small and medium businesses and what that's actually like, because I think for a lot of people that are used to, I don't know, maybe they have a college degree and they've worked for a consulting firm or like a big company or something like that, they don't really know what that's like, what a small business is like and what the challenges are and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit more about what are the benefits, what are the drawbacks, things like that?
Anything, Parker, you have?
Why don't you go first?
Okay. So one of the things I think about a small business is typically you have a small handful of employees. Like a lot of small businesses are under 5 employees, even though when we definitionally talk about a small business, it's under 500 employees, which is frankly pretty big, you know, if we really want to be honest. So most small businesses are, you know, 1 to 2 guys, maybe a team of 3. And then from there, it's like, am I going to scale? You know, a lot of folks in the SMB world, they kind of make enough and they're like, I'm content. I don't want to grow to 15, 50 employees. That's a whole different skill set. So there is this education, you know, opportunity. People go to Stanford to learn acquisition entrepreneurship. In the private equity world, you can be a limited partner and invest in that. And the average returns over the last like 30 years are like 32%. So it beats the stock market. It's up there close to the CAGR of Bitcoin. And it's very desirable because you own, like you said, Jimmy, one of these companies that really provide majority of America's jobs. The challenge is, though, there's been not a lot of like technology that can be interjected into the business, which is now becoming a reason for the younger generation to acquire these. There's a lot of efficiencies that can be made. And I always make the example, if you understand operations, sales, marketing, you're probably a great candidate to potentially acquire one of those. It's a lot of work. You know, there's a lot of risk. But one thing that's good, like a framework a lot of people approach with is if you use an SBA loan, which is a loan from the government, which helps you fund acquiring the business. If you acquire a business over $1 million in revenue, the average failure rate is under 2% because you're acquiring systems, processes, potentially a team, and now you bring your expertise in there to level it up pretty quickly. But a lot of issues do resolve around cash flow. You know, a lot of small businesses, they really do operate, you know, day by day, month by month. And my last point, I'd say, you know, market them for 12 years. It can be a challenge for them to pay their bills sometimes to like make it to the next month. So it's not for the faint of heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what I would just add from, you know, really why we're focused in this space is because when you're dealing with small to medium sized business, or you're dealing with an owner operated business, the person that's making the key decisions, not just in how to operate the business, but how to accept payment, are closest to the actual incentives. You know, if you think about, you know, the larger, say you take a public company and there's shareholders and there's all these different stakeholders that, and there's all these decision makers. So it's also fewer decision makers, fewer decision makers that are most aligned or maximally aligned with the underlying incentives of the business are the ones that are most logical, you know, in that universe of people that are beginning to understand Bitcoin. Imagine you're one person in a Fortune 500 company that understands Bitcoin, and then accept that, yeah, probably no more than 1 out of 100 people really understand Bitcoin. You know, then think about having to get a consensus of people on board. It is certainly possible. Jack Dorsey's business, Block has done it. MicroStrategy has done it. But when you think about, and we're certainly seeing this, you know, from Zaprite's side of enabling business, is if you have 1 or 2 key decision makers that own a business that's generating cash flow, then they're in a position to make a decision for their business with far less red tape to say, hey, I've I've got a problem. Because if it, like, realistically, the problem of fiat money is a problem for all businesses. It's particularly a problem for small businesses, but it's also one that they can solve easier than a much larger business, because they can say, hey, I'm willing to do this. I understand why, if I'm operating on, I might have a good cash flow, but it might be a relatively low margin. It might be I'm doing 10 million of revenue and it's a 10% margin business. And so I have a million, you know, net to myself. But if that's degrading each month, and my costs, operating costs of a business are going up each month or just changing unpredictably, and I'm having to essentially reinvent my business model, then I've seen this solution over my personal life of figuring out why Bitcoin will store its value better. My business is just an extension of me. And when it's a small to medium-sized business, they think about their business really as an extension of themselves and their families. And again, they're maximally incentivized to take that action to protect it. And so I think, you know, the challenges are very similar to, you know, again, there's different challenges to running a small and medium-sized business that has 5 to 100 people versus, you know, 5,000 people. But the underlying activity, and if people just think about, you know, they see on TV all these massive businesses, but then if they're in their local communities, just on their drive to work, people that fulfill most of the things in their daily lives, like the things that they actually need to sustain themselves, those critical services, they're typically, you know, facilitated by small to medium-sized businesses. You know, people doing dry cleaning, people doing, you know, providing restaurants, gas stations. A lot of those, that critical infrastructure that's providing you your last mile services, are owned and operated by small businesses.
Yeah, and it's good that you guys point this stuff out, because I think the way that most people have thought about, like, quote unquote, circular economy with Bitcoin and stuff like that, it's usually, hey, merchant, why don't you accept Bitcoin? You're going to get more business from Bitcoiners and so on. And that almost never, like, works out long term. A lot of businesses that do start taking Bitcoin because they're expecting more revenue end up, like, maybe getting a little bit at the beginning, but, like, after an initial burst, sort of, like, taper off and so on. And we've seen this all over the economy, where you'll have, like, a, you know, Bitcoin accepted here sign on the front of the store, but, you know, eventually they just forget how to do it. Nobody's trained in it. They don't think about the actual, you know, savings benefits and, you know, protection against inflation and so on. So, you know, Parker, you had an event at Bitcoin Commons, like, a couple of months ago, where you brought in a lot of small business owners and you were explaining a lot of the stuff that you were talking about to them. The thing that struck me about that event was just how much more, you know, they were involved in Bitcoin and they understood it for what it was, rather than just, okay, I'm going to get more revenue because there's going to be more Bitcoiners involved in this. It's much more about, okay, these are a different type of customer. These, you know, Bitcoin can help me with my, you know, balance sheet and not getting, you know, attacked by inflation and so on. So can you speak a little bit more about, like, getting a deeper understanding into the actual business owners and what that's like and how you do that, if at all?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, because I think there's two sides of that coin, so kind of for context for people, you know, it was a whole event focused on small, medium sized businesses, helping them both understand Bitcoin from why you should want to save in it, why you should think about it as a payment rail, but then also Jimmy hosted this panel of three local awesome businesses. One was a rancher, one was a doctor, and then one had a healthcare platform. And one of the interesting things, because I do caution people on this, I think that my perspective on it is, if you already understand Bitcoin, then you should be thinking about incorporating Bitcoin into your business. I fully align with Bobby that if you're a Bitcoiner and you're looking around and there's an opportunity to go buy a small to medium-sized business that's already generating cash flow, that's already demonstrated a proven both track record and business model, that those are great opportunities of ways to potentially both add value to your local community as well as generate income for yourself. But that there's this idea that I connected with, and it was actually Cole or Andy from Crowd. There's Cole from KNC or Andy from Crowd Health, where they talked about if you incorporate Bitcoin as a strategy, it will drive revenue for you. Now, if you do not understand Bitcoin, then you can't craft a marketing strategy to go get Bitcoiner. So as an example, we're onboarding a number of dentists to our platform. And if they didn't understand Bitcoin, they didn't understand how to access the Bitcoiners in their area or market to those people, then it's not going to drive revenue for them. But if there's one dentist in the greater Denver area that accepts Bitcoin and they know how to reach the Bitcoiners in Denver to get the signal out, there will be people that go over there. But the point that you make is the right one, Jimmy, where it's like, if you have no knowledge of Bitcoin, someone walks up and says, you should accept this as payment, they're going to forget how to do it. They're not going to see, they're not going to invest in that channel, basically. And then they're going to become disappointed by it because they're like, well, this seemed like a false promise. So really on two sides, that if you do not understand Bitcoin, if you don't understand the significance of Bitcoin's fixed supply, why it will store value, if you have not come to that point as an individual, you really cannot then extend it either from a balance sheet perspective to your business or from a strategy to enable growth of your business. But so in my view, it's like, hey, if you don't understand Bitcoin, pick up a copy of the Bitcoin Standard, get a copy of Bitcoin, the American Dream, buy Gradually Then Suddenly. But if you are somebody that already understands that, you should be actively thinking, hey, I need to incorporate either into my existing business or figuring out what business I can incorporate it into, and then go that next level to say, now, how am I going to, there are Bitcoiners everywhere. How am I going to tap those people and start channeling them into this business? Because Bitcoiners are value aligned. And if there's somebody that they expect understands Bitcoin and are aligned from a values perspective with them, they will spend their Bitcoin with you. But if they think that you're just going to convert it into fiat and that you're not values aligned or that they don't have some other reason to do business with you, then you're probably going to fail on both sides. You're not going to see the benefit on the growth side of your business, and you're certainly, you know, you're not going to realize the benefit of having accepted Bitcoin because you're just converting it immediately to fiat.
Bobby, your thoughts on circular economies and small businesses taking Bitcoin and so on?
Yeah, you both raise good points. It can lead to a bad experience when you say, hey, accept it, and they don't get it, and no one, like, you know, build it and they will come. That's not true in this specific scenario. But what Parker shared, like another good example, Ben Justman, you know, he's not necessarily a local business. His e-commerce business is growing. He sells wine, if anyone's seen him, Peony Lane. And he's leveraged the Bitcoin community, you know, fun memes, his fun-loving personality to expand his e-commerce business. And it's growing tremendously. But local businesses can do this too. And by connecting with Bitcoiners and extending that, we're at an early phase where in your local community, you are very likely to be a first mover. When there's 10 people who accept Bitcoin, it's going to be not as effective, you know, if there's 10 dentists in your local area who accept it. But very early on, there's a value add because Bitcoiners tend to have like a BS gauge, if you will. Like they tend to like have, you know, good principles, at least the people I believe we surround ourselves with. They have quality values and they can read through the noise. So if you are a person who gets it, to just further advance Parker's point, community will rally around it at this early stage. And at this very early stage, the friction from a marketing standpoint, if you get it and you know how to reach them, you'll get the business. But if you do that 3 years from now, when this is common knowledge, the value that your business will gain from it will be reduced because you're not the early adopter of accepting it as payment, like thinking of it and using it as a medium of exchange versus just a store of value.
Well, yeah. One thing I was just going to add, Jimmy, just on that idea of a circular economy, I think in many ways, you know, economies are circular. That really, when you think about it, especially as a business owner, and I think about this as Zaprite, you know, not only are we enabling people to accept Bitcoin as payment, but before we have even started charging for our service, a critical input was, well, we have to be able to accept Bitcoin as payment. And that it really, while economies are circular, we are all dependent on many different parties, the decision to accept Bitcoin for your business is singular. It's in the hands of the business owner. And the people, like it doesn't have to be as complicated as thinking about, well, when's the next person going to do it and the next person, and I need to get a critical mass. It's working as money today. The fiat rails are there. We're really focused on enabling Bitcoin as an option. But when people connect that, like nothing, if you own a business or you're thinking about owning a business, the only thing that's standing in your way, if you are a small or medium-sized business and it's owner-operated, is you. Of you saying like, okay, I figured out why the currency that's getting constantly devalued is a risk to me. And that's why I need to save in Bitcoin. If you've come to that conclusion, then I say, in your individual decision-making as a business owner, well, the rails of that currency system are a risk if the currency is a risk. And if you've already made the first big decision as an individual, then the second one follows very logically. You make that singular decision, okay, I need to create a redundancy in my rails and start accepting Bitcoin as payment, because even if it starts out as 1%, 2%, 3%, and then ultimately as more people, as whether it's more dentists show up or more restaurants show up, it's because the market of Bitcoin holders has increased over time, 1x, 3x, 10x, in the future 100x when everyone has it. But that decision of like circularity, it's really singularity. It's on you as a business owner to be in control of your own destiny. And if you've made the decision to run your own business, you're that type of person that wanted to take destiny in their own hands. It's more innate to them than it is somebody working at a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah, and I guess you could say that the buck stops here, or maybe the SAT stops here, or something like that, because you have control, and that's one of the benefits of running a small business, is that you have control. You, like, no one could tell you no if you want to go try something and do whatever. But Bobby, I wanted to pull the thread a little bit on what you were saying before about how a lot of these businesses, after you acquire them, there are a lot of sort of angles of optimization or making things better in some way, shape, or form of the business that already exists. Just having a fresh pair of eyes, maybe younger set of eyes or something like that, lets you see, okay, here are the things that should be there that aren't, and if you just change a few of these things, then you can drive more revenue, maybe have better cash flow and stuff like that. Where do you think how much of that juice can you squeeze, I guess? Because I think for a lot of people that are watching, maybe they are interested in acquiring a business that like some boomer is trying to get rid of, but that's got good cash flow and so on. How much of an optimization can you make, and how much value can you add as sort of like an outsider to a particular business?
Yeah, good question. I think of it as this kind of small, step-by-step process. Number one, do you have the skill set to take it over and actually do the job if a key man quits, yes or no? If yes, great. If no, okay. Part two, whenever you go and look at this deal, because you go through some form of underwriting, risk analysis, cash flow analysis, you study the business in and out before you ever buy it. So when you're looking at it, do you see where you can bring processes in place that are going to improve the day-to-day efficiency? Are there big marketing gaps? As a marketer, whenever people would come through our agency, they would just be like, yeah, we've never used an email list. We don't have a CRM. We track everything on paper. I run my business from an AOL email. I see that and I'm just like, the moment you start working with me, sales are going to go up 60%. It's very easy. Done that countless times over the last 10 years. So when I see those, that's exciting. As a marketer, if I was acquiring, I would love to see that. Or maybe you're a salesperson. It's like, hey, how do you generate sales? It's all word of mouth. That might be a risk when acquiring that business, because it's a guy who's owned a business for 50 years and his community loves him. Or maybe it's just he's got reviews on Google, you know, word of mouth of the internet, right? And then you don't have paid, you don't have content optimization, you don't have social, etc. Those are the type of things you might look at. You know, a lot of these guys that go to school, they come at it from a finance angle or mm-hmm. an operations angle. But what's beautiful about the modern day is anyone can go online and learn a lot of these skills. And that's how I look at it, just from a simple way. Like, do you have the skill set to run it day to day if you lose a key man? No. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Depending on what you pick, can you bring operational efficiency or marketing and sales skills to improve it? And if you can do that, maybe it's worth deeper looking at. And that's, I think, like the simple way to go through the analysis.
Yeah. And the other thing I would add there too is people don't necessarily need to think about this as, hey, let me go be a private equity firm, but on a smaller basis, you know, mm-hmm. where I had this experience, you know, probably about a year ago where a friend of mine, you know, had a landscaper, large landscaping business, and like very profitable. Basically, it was someone who did their landscaping work, and the owner died. And there was nobody immediately to take over the business. And so they just sent out a notice. They were like, hey, in 2 weeks, we're going to shut down. And I think ultimately, in that case, the guy's brother stepped in to run the business. And it doesn't have to necessarily be in the context of someone passing away. But this idea that, like, you don't just have to go in and buy, like, you could be an apprentice. You know, you could find a business that you like, get out of the bean counting, you know, Fortune 500 world. And, you know, thinking about last week, we had a Bitcoin urbanism thing with Austin Tunnell from Building Culture. Well, he started as an apprentice of 1,000-year growth, you know, whereas like find a business that you actually like, that you actually value. Maybe you have the opportunity to buy it, or maybe Bobby probably has a better sense of these numbers, but I would suspect, just based on the cultural shift that happened over the last 20, 30 years, and I was genuinely a part of it when I went and worked for a large investment bank, is that there's probably a lot of businesses out there that are very valued in their communities that have owners and operators that are, you know, getting beyond the age where they want to be dealing with running the business every day, or that there needs to be a succession plan, and that it might not be as simple or maybe more complicated to say, hey, I'm going to go buy this business and have to study it. I can come in and figure out, maybe there, you know, be an apprentice or have a plan to take something over, because it becomes there's a need for that to happen, and that you actually learn from the business owner, and you can create a way to align incentives. Hey, transfer this knowledge for me, and it's not as cut and dry as just like I'm buying you out and now I'm the operator, without having the benefit of all of those years, decades of running a valuable business. So just thinking about that as an avenue.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point. Like, I think for a lot of people that are thinking about acquiring a business or whatever, the thing that you said, Bobby, early on about, okay, do you have the skills to run the business? And what you said, Parker, about like being an apprentice so that you can maybe gain some of those skills. How long does that take, and how much study or practice or experience do you need? And, you know, I imagine it's dependent on the industry, but like how long can someone expect to be in sort of like an apprentice role before you're ready for prime time?
Yeah, I mean, an interesting thing, trade schools in South Carolina where I live, they're giving people free tuition because there's a shortage. There's a shortage of quality people doing these, you know, white collar jobs. Everyone thought AI was going to replace them. Nope, it's replacing engineers. Like it's replacing a lot of tech stuff. So, but as far as apprenticeship, I mean, I couldn't tell you the exact timelines, but I would say minimum, you know, 2 to 4 years for stuff. But if you can get the basics, you can easily make $80,000-$90,000+. And what Parker said, like someone randomly dies and no one can take over it. There's something called identity foreclosure happening, where kids don't do what their parents did. And if you look back when America was founded and everyone flooded to America, if you go back to old New York City, you know, certain races did a certain thing. Certain people from certain walks of life did a certain thing. Ever since then, hundreds of years ago, we've all kind of gone down our own creative path, doing what we desire. You know, that this is America. This is what makes it beautiful. Our country is so unique in that way. And we're seeing it still happen today, where dad did plumbing for 60 years. The kids don't want to do it. You know, who's going to take over it? And you see these memes on Twitter of like this truck driving down the interstate, and there's like 40 cop cars chasing him, and it says like Stanford grads emailing plumbers saying, hey, I want to be the steward of your company and I want to take care of it and nurture its legacy. And they're only there because the margins are 80%, you know, and they know they're going to exit in 10 years after growth and sell it for $50 million. You know, they go to school to do that. Like, so there's a real need, and trying to take this a step further. There's a real need for people to want to own these companies and build it, not to sell it, but build it to serve people, to serve employees, to like give a better walk of life to our community. So,
Well, I mean, that sounds like you need some experience then. And there's, I guess, education in addition to that, like going to school to learn this stuff. And, you know, I get that like a lot of trade schools are free, but like you can go and learn like HVAC or plumbing or something, but how much does that prepare you to actually run a plumbing business or an HVAC business? Because I imagine there's like separate things.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have probably interacted with a contractor before if you own a home or you've got a rental and you like tell your landlord and then they send a random contractor, and there's some who delight you where you're like, wow, that person really understands customer service. And then you walk with someone, they come in, you know, maybe reeking of cigarettes, have a really bad attitude, like all these things that as a customer service, as a person receiving it, you're just kind of like, that didn't leave me feeling great. Like as a owner operator, you want to have a consistent experience for customers. Like when you drink a cup of Starbucks, whether or not we like them, it tastes the same anywhere in the globe. When you go to Chick-fil-A, anywhere in America, it's consistent. When it comes to customer experiences, you want every customer to receive a delightful, consistent experience, no matter the team member. And if you're going from 3 guys to 50 and you want to serve, you know, a tri-county area or expand to like 3 states, how are you going to go about doing that? You know, trade schools don't teach you that. That's a business school thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a lot of great books out there that teach that, but they're very different skill sets, you know, running the day-to-day of like serving, you know, local customers versus how am I going to train 30 middle-aged people to care and show up and care about my business. That's a challenge.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, ultimately you need to understand the underlying value of the business, or you need to understand, you know, a lot of times people evaluate businesses on paper, but, you know, I think to your question, Jimmy, if you don't know how to do the thing or how understand intimately how the thing works that is the core of your business, then your ability to run it is non-existent. You might be able to move it forward for a period of time, but you have no way to see around corners. And so it's probably one of those things where you need to understand how to do the core function. You can't lead people. You can't have some knowledge of what the next thing you're going to be able to do without that. But then again, that just having that knowledge is probably not enough, because then, you know, being able to actually run from an operations perspective and understand all the moving pieces and being able to make decisions and importance of not just making decisions, but good decisions, it's definitely a cumulative knowledge base, but it starts with understanding whatever that business is, understanding it very well. And it would be, you know, people say stay humble and stack sats. It's like, be humble. You know, if you see a business that's, you know, generating X, but you don't actually understand, you know, how to do that thing yourself or how to bring all the moving pieces together, to think that you can just step in and it's plug and play, you know, running a business is not bean counting, you know, like a lot of finance professionals want to think of them. They're living organisms, you know, very much.
So a good point Parker made, there was a guy who shared a story the other day on Twitter. He acquired a business, I believe, for $5 million. And a bunch of it met all the numbers, you know, like when it comes to the numbers you run, it's like, great. But there were problems that happened that he didn't have the foresight to. He didn't maybe know how to manage it. And it became a major problem and it put his family through hell. So when you go through the diligence process of, do I buy this deal? A lot of times you might invest $50,000 to $75,000. It's better to lose that $50,000 to $70,000 and say no to a deal versus just acquiring a business because you want to acquire it. You know, if you're going to buy that thing, you had better be ready and dedicated to say, hey, if sales fall by 50%, do I have the wherewithal to see that through? and continue regardless of the challenges that I face. Like, that's not uncommon. You know, it's not risk-free.
Mm. Well, it sounds a lot like holding. So, I mean, it does sound like there's a lot of skills involved and so on. But for people in my audience that are interested in this, where do you get started? Like, how do you even start looking into it? And maybe a lot of them don't have that much savings. Maybe they are holding a little bit of Bitcoin, but you know, it's nowhere near. Like, what would you suggest that they do to get to the point where they could potentially acquire a business, have cash flow, and make a nice living for themselves, maybe start a family soon after, and all of that? Like, what would you suggest?
I would say, like, don't approach it as a bean counter. Mm. And don't approach it as, I am looking for X amount of income, and so therefore what businesses generate X amount of income, because that becomes this soulless search for something that, in my view, will be a fool's errand. And that the better approach is, and this is, the beauty of Bitcoin, but more realistically, money and what money is supposed to enable of trade and specialization, it's to, when you think about this greater scheme, everyone can focus on the things that they find a calling to or an interest in, and then money allows them to be compensated for investing their time in the thing that they're actually interested in, to then be able to go in terms of what they want to devote their labor to in their craft, and then they can take that money and go buy all the other things. And if you have a form of money that's finite, Bitcoin works better than the others, and it allows you to only ultimately work on the things that you value. That's what I think about when it comes back to Bitcoin, is what Bitcoin's afforded me is I'm now only working on things that I actually value, rather than working to pay the bills. But then when you think about how that extends to your question, Jimmy, of like, if someone was interested in going and starting a small business or buying one, it's to focus on that, singular aspect too, of like, well, what are you interested in? And a good place to start with what you are interested in are, what are the things you need in your daily life that you value? And then, is there a way for you to get out of the investment bank or partner track at the law firm or big four accounting firm or management consulting and say, hey, I literally buy things from that business every day. Can I be a part of that business, or can I be an apprentice, or is there another business? Should I start one? That it needs to start from a perspective of your own personal interest, because if you start at the end point, which is solving for, I need to make X, and now I need to, find a database that has all the businesses that make X, you're basically recreating the same problem that you already have, and you're probably not going to be successful in pursuing that activity, because you're never going to have a passion for it. But if you start for the things that you actually enjoy, that becomes the root of successful specialization, in my view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. So there's a lot of influencers online who will just share the top 1% stories, and it kind of is a lead gen funnel to sell you their community or product. So I'm not going to go naming names on like people you can follow. You can just start searching for this and you'll get recommended them by algorithms. But some good books, if you'd like to get lost in the weeds for like a week, Buy Then Build by Walker Dybul. He's one of the early guys who first started talking about this. This is a good, good, good book. And then the Harvard Business Review Guide to Buying a Small Business. This is another great book, where if you buy these two, or if you get involved in the SMB Twitter community, those are the two books literally everyone's going to point you to. So get a head start, read about it a little bit, learn, some of the challenges, the history of like acquisition. But at the same time, if you want to, build yourself, start from scratch. Like, my DMs are open. I'm happy to chat with people about specifically this and Bitcoin. I want to see people find their passion. It's like something I love doing, is just helping people along the way, being a resource. So get connected on Twitter. There's a huge community. And if you want, there's ways you can start a business yourself. And it's de-risk. Maybe you do it on the weekends, but you work on setting a goal of, I want to do this service once a month, and then get a review from friends and family. There's no one in the world stopping you but yourself from having, 12 to 20 reviews by the end of the year. And then maybe you say, hey, I'm going to go out on the risk curve and invest in a website, you know, buy some of these other tools that are going to take it to the next level and you can get your feet wet. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to approach it. The acquisition side is a way to kind of, you know, have cash flow from day one if you've got the wherewithal to do it. But there's low risk
and the cash, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and the cash. And I mean, they let you do 5% down, no percent down, but you know, you're you're entering a whole world of, you know, deeper finance where you're going to be bean counting at the end of the day, because you're like, can I make this work? You know, there's a lot of ways to do it, but I think the opportunity is there. And I don't know if we said it on this call, Jimmy, but before the call, 10,000 boomers retiring a day, you know, a lot of them, not majority, but like 33% or so own small businesses. And that's most of the wealth in America. And these people, 7 out of 10, don't sell their business, like the example Parker made. The guy randomly, sadly died, they were going to shut it down. Either someone isn't there to inherit it, there's not an apprentice there, or it's not going to sell. So the opportunity to start is there too. It's just a matter of, you know, pick your poison. You know, are you going to build it from scratch? Are you going to acquire it? And ultimately for Bitcoiners, which, you know, I know your audience is Bitcoiners, take a step towards accepting Bitcoin, add it to your payment stack, and tell people, you know, find Bitcoiners. And they will rally around you. I mean, this is, yeah, it's effective. I think it really works. And it's great to see, you know, Ben Justman and some of these other guys who are doing it, KC and Cattle, and like the Value for Value initiative. I have a lot of people bringing that up to me in these like small business meetings that I have. Like, it's happening, but it's one person at a time. It really is one person at a time. But, you know, we're making progress. Mm-hmm.
Well, so give me a good pitch for why people should consider this. Because, I mean, for me, I think you've sold me. I want to do something like this eventually and have a business that, you know, I can maybe, you know, get really passionate about and, like, control entirely on my own, have self-sovereignty and so on. But give me your pitch on why Bitcoiners should do this. What? How is it going to add to the community? How is that going to add something to civilization? What's your best pitch for why Bitcoiners should consider either starting or acquiring a small business?
You want me to go?
Either one of you.
I would just say my first pitch would be, have you ever heard of the Monday morning test, where if you wake up Monday morning and you want to go to work, then you've passed the Monday morning test. And if you don't, then you failed. And most people fail the Monday morning test, right? So I think the first step is ask yourself that question honestly. And if you're failing the Monday morning test, then you're wasting a finitely scarce time, right? And that, you know, to respect yourself and value yourself, be honest about that. And if that's you, then, you know, then you're to the next step of saying, okay, I need to figure out how to spend my time in a way that I'm going to value it and look forward to that, because it is a vocation or a calling, and I can also turn that into something that allows me to make money. And then to think about, so I think that's first, and then to think about, say, like, hey, you know, the difference between paying bills and creating value. Because if there are things that you genuinely value, and you can probably stack rank them, that there's a real need. Because to Bobby's point, there are a lot of those businesses that are going to go out of business if not. And there's going to be a void. It's either going to be absorbed by some big box that's not going to deliver as much value to the community. And then there's some self-worth in it, delivering value back to your local community and in a way that aligns interest to be paid for it. And if it's something that you are genuinely interested in, you are going to find that it will deliver a lot more wealth to you than just money. And so I think, you know, it really starts with that. And you know, it's challenging. It, like Bobby said, it's, you know, trying to build Zapright. It's a small business. It comes with a lot of risk. It comes with a lot of responsibility, and it doesn't come with guaranteed success. But it is a whole lot more rewarding than being, you know, a small cog in a big engine, basically. And you are in control of your own destiny. And if you match something that you're genuinely interested in with control of your own destiny, that even though it might be daunting, it's like, yeah, you might fail, but you can also pick yourself up. But if you match those two things together, the odds are going to be far more in your favor than if you just look in the statistics of, you know, success rates of small businesses.
Yeah, those are good points. And for those listening, maybe you do the Thursday morning test. If you feel it even before the weekend, you know, you might even have a serious case of the blues. But I agree with everything Parker shared there. And I think, you know, there's like Crumble Cookies, for instance, just cookies. It was a side hustle for some guy. Now it's a $1 billion company because they took making cookies very serious. The guy who made the Scrubby with the smiley face on it that was on Shark Tank, you know. That lady invested $100,000 for 30%. Now it's worth $300 million. These little things that are unique and nuanced to us that are just our passion projects, you know, you don't need to go invest your life savings to start something. You can give your weekends, you can give your evenings to doing what you love. But if you have the skill set and you wake up and you say, I don't love this, I want to go find a business, do the research, read the books. You'd be surprised what you could do in a weekend with 10 to 12 hours of heads down work, you know. Maybe don't be Andreas Antonopoulos and don't get up or eat for 3 months, you know, learning Bitcoin, but invest your time intentionally. And one thing I'll say about people and what we've talked a lot about, like values and principles of business, there's people out there who are deeply craving quality service and they're willing to pay for it. Like, we got a home that was built and it's falling apart already. It doesn't even keep our kids warm. Like, the difference in the degrees in the rooms are 10 degrees and we're battling our home builder for a year and a half, and it hinders me from doing my job because I care about my kids, you know. Like, there's home builders that are causing pain for families. Like, there's all kinds of things in the local community where if you're passionate, you care about people, you want to do a good service, you want to do it the right way, they're going to pay you. I mean, like Parker said, it's risky starting a small business, but if you treat everyone as an individual, you truly care about their needs, you're willing to do what it takes to be successful, and you're passionate about what you do, I would bet on that person 9 times out of 10, because like Parker said, like, if you're the type of person who's an entrepreneur and you're a self-starter and you're kind of willing your life to be what you want it to be and you create the future you want to see, it should be no issue for you to offer and extend Bitcoin to your customers as a payment mechanism. Same thing if you're a Bitcoiner and let's say your savings is ballooning and you're like, hey, you know, every incremental amount of sats that I stack isn't transforming my savings, you know, what can I do further to add value and change the world beyond just saving in a better form of money? Maybe at this point it takes 5 or 10% of your stack to acquire that business or to invest to start in it. You've actually got the capital to bootstrap. Maybe that's something you do. You know, the woman who started Spanx, who's married to Jesse Itzler, I don't know her name, but I'm sure every woman can name her because she's a billionaire. She bootstrapped her company. It was a clothing company. Like, there's so many ways to peel back this onion, and it's just a matter of, you know, being serious with yourself. How do you want to approach it? But people out there are truly craving these solutions. And I'll just kind of say this as like my final piece. I was talking with Mark Moss. I was telling him about the SMB thing, and he was like, oh yeah, I'm friends with Cody Sanchez. Like, they both live in Austin. And he was like, well, while the SMB piece is really attractive, the thing he's seen a lot of opportunity, because the world's so divided, you can't ride the middle and be accepted by everyone. You have to pick what you stand for. We've talked a lot about values and principles. He said the blue ocean strategy right now are these principles-based businesses, where if you build a business that's foundationally on your values and your principles and you stand for it in an unwavering way, people are willing to pay for it. And you don't have to win on like the highest quality. Just the fact they know what you stand for, they're going to back you, you know? And you see CEOs all the time sharing their political opinions, speaking up about things going on in the world, because there's a lot going on people don't agree with. And I know like some HR folks will say, don't talk about politics, this and that, but this impacts our livelihoods. This is impacting the money. This impacts, are we going to have food on the table tomorrow? So principled-based businesses that are about your beliefs and like what you stand for are also going to win. And that'll be my, I guess, like kind of closing comment on that topic.
Well, hopefully that's inspiring to the people that are listening to this, and maybe we'll see more Bitcoin-based businesses that are providing goods and services all over the economy. Where can people find out more about you, and where can people read more on some of the stuff that you said?
Yeah, for myself, I'm on X, Twitter, Bobby Shell. Try to be active on LinkedIn too. I work at Voltage. Like I said, we're trying to create a lot of content around this, starting to work closer with Zapright and Parker, which I'm really excited about, helping businesses. Twitter's probably the best place to connect with me.
Yeah, for me, Zapright, you can find us on the website. You know, what I would just say is, you know, that's the side of people who, you know, should you start a business or you should acquire a business, but to, you know, your initial point, 80 to 90% of businesses are small and medium sized businesses. So if that is you and you've already started to understand Bitcoin and why it stores value, then in my view, it's irrational not to be seriously thinking about accepting as payment, because it is just a more efficient way, cheaper way to acquire Bitcoin with greater diversity, direct connections to your customers, and a redundancy in a payment rail. And that's really what we're working on at Zapright. So people can find us there, Zapright, Zaprite.com. And then people can find my book. If there's somebody who does not yet understand Bitcoin or been pointed to this podcast by a friend who does, they can find my book, Gradually Then Suddenly, on thesafehouse.com. So Safety and Moose's website, who wrote the Bitcoin Standard, thesafehouse.com, safe spelled S-A-I-F. And on Twitter, Parker A. Lewis.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. And hopefully we get more Bitcoin businesses. I know I would love to spend some of my Bitcoin on stuff that I really want. I mean, that's what the money is there for. So, but thank you guys for coming.
Appreciate you having us on, Jimmy.